All right, we'll say good morning. Today's daf is Chaf Hey 25. We are going to pick up at Tanur Rabbanon, which is on Chaf Dalet 24b 246, 8 lines up from the bottom. So a lot to do today. Interesting Gemara. So Tanur Rabbanon, the rabbis taught. Hare Shahaya Rabo Rofe. Let's say the master, remember we're talking about different situations under which the loss of a limb will result in emancipation. So Hare Shahaya Rabo Rofe. Let's say again the master was a doctor. Va'amarlo v'kolo eino v'sama lachter loshino v'epila. And let's say the Eved asked, well, the advantage of having a master who's a doctor is that you get in-house some medical treatment. So the Eved says to his master, my eye is bothering me. The master treats the eye. What happens? He ends up blinding him. Or the master is a dentist. The Eved says, my tooth is bothering me. The master takes a look at the eye and what? And he knocks out the tooth. So what's the halacha? Sichek ba'adon v'yatza. So the Eved laughs at his master and he goes free. V'yatza l'cheiros. In other words, that the master was trying to help, but the Eved goes free. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, v'shichasa. Literally, again, the Adon will impact the Eved in a negative way. V'shichasa, ad sheyiskaven l'shachasa. No, so Rav Shimon Gamliel, he disagrees. He says that the only time the Eved goes free is that when the master ultimately, again, had intent to go ahead and had intent for destructive activity, had intent to go ahead and knock out the tooth or blind the eye. V'rabbanon, the rabbis, hi v'shichasa, my abdi leif. So what did the rabbanon do with the phrase v'shichasa? Mibayli l'chidisanyo. Rabbi Lazar Omer, hari shahoshit yado l'may shivchasa v'sima uber shivime'eha. Pater. So they use Rabbi Lazar for the following case, that if the Adon was helping to deliver the baby of his maidservant, and while reaching in to go and deliver the baby, he blinds the eye of the baby, that ultimately he's pater. Right? Meaning the Adon is not considered to have damaged the baby intentionally. My time, it's actually very interesting. So the machlokis over here is the following. According to the Rabbanan, if the master had any intention to do something with the eye, and subsequently blinds the Eved, he's held accountable for that act because he had intention to deal with the eye. So for example, if the Eved has an eye problem and the Adon begins to treat it and the Adon subsequently blinds him, the Adon is held responsible. Why? Because there was intent. There was intent to deal with the eye of the Eved. Even though his intent was to help and it turns out that he hurt, Eved still goes free. If, however, the Adon had no intention to deal with the eye while he's delivering the baby, and in the course of delivering the baby, he accidentally blinds the eye of the baby, halacha l'maaseh, so again, because there was no intent to deal with the eye, therefore, the Eved does not go free. On the other hand, Shimon Gamliel says, no, that the intent over here is for destructiveness. If the Adon's intention was to help, meaning with the eye, and he accidentally blinds the Eved does not go free because of that. It's only when there's an intent for some type of destructive activity, that's when the Eved goes free. So the Gemara says, my time, I'm a krav v'shichasa. Achelosh v'idach, and the other opinion, mi v'shiches shichasa nafka. He learns that out from the fact that the pasuk could have said v'shiches, but instead it said v'shichasa v'idach, and the other opinion will say, shiches shichasa lo darish. They don't darshan, they both say shiches shichasa, they both say, what do you mean they don't darshan shiches shichasa? We've seen this throughout Shas, which is that sometimes there are some who darshan an extra letter, and others who do not darshan extra letters. That's at the root of the machlokes over here. So Amar of Sheshas, hari shahai se'inu simuyi v'chateta, let's say the Eved was blind in his eye, and the Adon subsequently knocks the eye out of the socket. So the eye was already blind, but the Adon comes along and knocks the eye out of the socket. Eved yotzei bahem lecheiros. The Eved goes free. The Eved goes free. My time, what's the reason? Mechoser evrihu, because now he's missing a limb. Because even though the eye was not functional beforehand, it was there. Now that he knocks out the eye, so he's considered to be missing a limb, and therefore the Eved goes free. Ayvetana tuna. We learn this as well. Tamos v'zichos b'mehema ve'in tamos v'zichos ba'obos. So both said that halacha is that by an animal that is going to be used for a carbon, there must be tamos v'zichos. Tamos v'zichos means the animal must be whole, meaning it can't be deficient. And zichros, ultimately, the animal must be male. However, this halacha in tamos v'zichos ba'obos, these criteria do not apply to birds. So the Gemara says, Yachol yav shagapa niktar ragla nechateta ina. So I'm going to thought that when that means that by a bird offering, even if its wing dried up, or its foot was cut off, or its eye was gouged out, that it should still be okay as a burnt offering. Talmud Lomar, min ha'of, v'lo kol ha'of. Therefore, the pasuk says that you could bring from certain birds, but you can't bring all birds. In other words, we'll say that even though, again, the criteria for sacrificial birds might be a bit more relaxed than sacrificial animals, one thing is clear, which is what? The bird must be whole. So if the bird is missing a leg, the bird is missing a wing, the bird is missing an eye, the bird is not usable for sacrificial service. Amar Rav Chiya bar Ashi, Amar Rav, Hai Solo is an interesting case. Top of Chaf Hey, Yeseres. Yeseres. Let's say again, Yeseres. Let's say the Eved had an extra finger. So let's say, for imagine a moment, the Eved had six fingers. Had six fingers. The Chatcha, and the Adon cut off one of the fingers. Well, so you understand the Shaila over here. So under normal circumstances, again, so if the Adon cuts off a finger, so Lamaisa, again, that's grounds for emancipation. Let's say it's a sixth finger. So does the Eved go free for that? To which the Gemara says, yes, Eved Yosei Ben Lecherus. Yes, the Eved goes free. However, Amrav Huna, Bohushen Esperes Agav Hayad. That's only true if what he's referring to over here is that the finger was in the regular order of fingers. In other words, that essentially it's a usable finger. That it's a finger that would have been part of his activities of daily living. But if the finger is somehow growing out not in the order of the fingers, then that's considered to be more just some type of abnormality. And therefore, again, the loss of that would not go ahead and set the Eved free. Sabi dinezunya lo asul pirka de Rav Chista. So we'll say the elders of Nezunya did not come to Rav Chista Shir. Nezunya is a place. Nezunya is a place. So Rav Chista is giving Shir in Nezunya, and the elders did not show up. Amar Rav Hamnuna, Rav Chista is upset. He tells Rav Hamnuna, Zil Tzaninhu. Now Zil Tzaninhu literally means go and sequester them. Rashi says, Zil Tzaninhu, Emor Lehem Lahaskiu Lahishe Babayis. Tell them they should stay home. So apparently, Rav Chista is dispatching Rav Hamnuna to tell the elders that Rav Chista is very unhappy with them. And I will say, what's the chap over here? So remember, again, this is not a covet issue. What this is over here is that if the elders aren't coming to the shir, then what kind of example does that set for the masses? So again, remember, it always has to be a trickle down effect with leadership. If leadership sets the tone, then the masses ultimately, hopefully, follow suit. So Rav Chista is saying, if the elders don't come to the shir, so then ultimately, again, what's going to happen with the masses? So therefore, Rav Chista dispatches Rav Hamnuna to tell the elders that he's upset with them. So Rav Hamnuna shows up. And he says, why didn't you come? He's talking to the elders. Why didn't you come to the shir? This is interesting. Amrulei, amai nesi. So the elder said, why should we come to the shir, Rav Chista? Whenever we ask him questions, he doesn't answer. He didn't say questions during the shir, apparently. Right? So what happens? Whenever we come, he never answers us. So Amar Lahu, so we'll say, this exchange actually very interesting. Amar Lahu, mi ba isu minai mi di v'lo pashit. Did you ever ask me anything and I never answered you? So we'll say, so apparently, what Rav Hamnuna was saying was, look, if Rav Chista doesn't answer, it's okay, I'm Rav Chista's Talmud. So if you ever have a question, you could always feel free to ask me, and I'll be happy to answer you. So what happens? Bo'u mine. So they ask them the following question. Evet shasarsu rabo bebeitzim. So we'll say, so now we're going to get into some of the other deeds. So remember, up until now we've been speaking about Shane and Ayin. What happens if the master injures the testicles of the Eved and cuts off the testicles of the Eved? Mahu. So what is Alach Mahu? And I understand over here what we're talking about now is we've defined the criteria for injuries that set an Eved free. And the criteria is, number one, that it's a blemish shenachozer, it doesn't regenerate, and it's begaloi, and it's not public, but what's visible, thank you, and it's visible. So the shayla is mahu. So what is the halacha with such an injury? Kimum shebegaloi dami olo. Is this considered to be a visible injury or not? Well, so now take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Kimum shebegaloi dami shahari teluyin bekis v'nikarim mibachutz olo Hoil utumunim b'sochakis. So what's I say? The issue over here is, remember, the testicles themselves, the beitzim, are not visible on the outside because, again, they're encased in the, I mean, in the kiss. The kiss is the scrotum. So because of that, again, because of that, are they considered to be a mum sheba galoy or not? So the Gemara says, oh no, lo hava biyadeh. So listen to this. They ask Rav Hamnuna this question. Rav Hamnuna couldn't answer. So they say to him, amru lo mashmecha. So they said to him, no, what's your name? Amru lahu Hamnuna. He said, my name is Hamnuna. Amru lei laf Hamnuna ela Karnuna. Your name is not Hamnuna, rather it's Karnuna. So what's that? So that is a Talmudic insult. So why? What's Karnuna? Rashi says over here, Yoshev Kronos. Yoshev Kronos of Osai. Remember again, Yoshev Kronos is the Talmudic expression for the guys who sit in the corner, right? If you ever go to Washington Heights, you know, you see the guys in the overturned milk crates. I don't know, maybe you see it downtown also, I don't know. Overturned milk crates, and they're playing cards at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So those are the Yoshev Kronos, right? Those ultimately, again, the people, Baruch Hashem, would seem very relaxed, have nothing else to do in life. Nothing else to do in life. So they said, Hamnuna, what do you mean? Your name is Karnuna. You're not doing anything. You're sitting in the corners and not engaging any productive activity. Asa lekamei d'Rav Chista. So Rav Hamnuna came back to Rav Chista. He told Rav Chista what happened. So Rav Chista said, listen, Amrlei masnisa ba'uminach. The truth is, they were asking you a question based on an explicit Mishnah. That's why, again, you know, you said, essentially, Rav Hamnuna kind of set himself up a little bit for this, because he positioned himself as someone who could answer all of their questions. They asked him a question, he couldn't answer. Meanwhile, again, that question, the answer to that question, was found in an explicit Mishnah. This time, because we learned, Esrim va'arba rashei varim sheba adam, kulam ein metamin mishum michya. We'll say there are 24 parts, 24 tips of the organs, or parts of the body, that do not become tamei because of michya. I will say, michya is a type of tzara'as blemish. Good morning, Mr. Schoenfeld. So michya is the type of tzara'as blemish, which again, remember, so what michya is essentially is you have like a white spot with healthy flesh in the middle. It doesn't have to be dafka in the middle, but somewhere embedded in that white spot. So the halacha is that there are 24, the 24 tips of the body do not become tamei with michya. Why not? The eluhim. So first of all, identify 24 tips. Etzbos. 10 fingers, etzbos yadayim v'raglayim, 10 fingers, 10 toes, rosh ha'aznayim, the tops of the ears, v'rosh ha'chotem, the top of the nose, v'rosh ha'gaviyah, suppose that rosh ha'gaviyah means the makomila, v'rosh ha'dadayim shebi'isha, and the tips of a woman's chest, Rabbi Yehuda Omer af sheba'ish, even the tips of a man's chest. V'tani, so we'll say, so that's 24. Rabbi Yehuda adds on another 2. V'tani Allah, b'kulam eve yotzim al-mecher. So we'll say, just going back to the mecher for just a moment, the reason why none of these parts of the body are affected or impacted by michya is because Rashi points this out. In order to go ahead and look at the michya, in order to look at this, and look at this sara'as, blemish, the kohen has to be able to see it all at once. The problem is that if this sara'as appears on any of the 24 tips, it's on the top, but it also extends down the side. Therefore, the kohen cannot see all of it at once. So because of a technicality, it doesn't become time because of sara'as. But here's the part that's important for us. Tani Allah, b'kulam eva yotzeibahem. If there's an injury in any of these 24 parts, so an eved goes free. An eved goes free. Rabbi Huda says, Af Sheba'ish. So remember, Rabbi Omer, Af Hasirus. So now, interestingly enough, so the fact that the Mishnah explicitly says that what? That Lamaisa, again, an Eved goes free with any of these. So it sounds like over here that let's see. Let's develop it a little bit more because we haven't answered the question just yet. So the Gemara, Rebbe says, Afasirus. So Rebbe says, in addition to the 24 things outlined in this Braisa, that if an Eved is injured in any of these areas, he goes free. In addition to that, is Sirus. Well, in a Sirus, we normally translate as castration. That's only what Sirus means. So it says the Gemara, look at Rashi for just a moment. So Rashi says, Rabbi Omer Afas Sirus, Mosif al Elu Le'inyan Eved, V'shein V'ayin Lo Itzrefan. So Rabbi Yehuda is adding this on to the list of things for which an Eved will go free. Ben Azai Omer Af Haloshen. Ben Azai says, even the tongue. Even if an Eved's tongue is cut off, he also goes free for that. Rabbi Omer Afas Sirus, Sirus Demai. So also when Rabbi says that an Eved goes free because of Sirus, because of literally castration, what are we talking about? Ilema sirus tigid. If you want to say that it's talking about a cutting off of the actual makomila, so hainu gavia. Remember, that was already counted as one of the 24 tips of the organ. Ela lav sirus de beitzim. Rather, Rebbe must be talking about sirus, castration of the testicles. And Rebbe must be saying that even if the beitzim were cut off, the eved goes free. Which tells us what Rebbe said, that even though the beitzim are encased in the kiss, nevertheless, halach lamaisa, it's considered to be a mum shebegaloi. It's considered to be a visible injury, and therefore the eved will go free. Rebbe Omer, af asirus. So Rebbe says, even sirus, the Rebbe lashon lo. Is that to say that Rebbe disagrees with Ben Azai? Because Ben Azai says you even go out for the loss of the tongue. So according to, is Rebbe disagreeing with that and saying that for a tongue, one does not go free? Or minu bo reza kasha, harmisha haya maza vinitza hazo apiv. So we're going to raise a kasha on a totally unrelated topic. Paraduma. Let's say somebody became tamei with tumas meis. Somebody contracted ritual impurity from contact with a corpse. They have to get sprinkled on with the ashes and the water of the para aduma, or the ashes of the para aduma mixed with spring water. So the idea is that the azot, the sprinkling, has to land on the person. So let's say the sprinkling landed on the person's mouth. Rebbe Omer Hiza. Rebbe says it's a proper sprinkling. It is not a proper sprinkling. My love alushono. Are we not talking about where the water landed on the person's tongue? Lo, al sefasav. No, we're talking about a case where it landed on his lips. Al sefasav, pshita. If it landed on his lips, then it's pashut that the person should become tar. Why would anyone say that if the water lands on the lips, that ultimately that's not good? Because mal detem, what would I have thought? Zimna dechalim sefasay. I would have thought sometimes a person, purses his lips, puts them together very tightly. And therefore, again, the lips turn inward. Maybe it's not considered to be an exposed part of the body. We'll say the underlying piece over here is that the water of the para aduma must fall on an exposed part of the body. So the hava mina is, I would have thought that since sometimes people purse their lips, and therefore the lips turn inward, then maybe the lips are not considered to be an exposed part of the body, and therefore if the water falls there, that's not a proper sprinkling. Therefore, the Gemara says, Kamasha, and that's not the case. I v'hatanya alushono. But yet, again, we have another brisa that says that even if the water, paraduma water, fell on the person's tongue, that it's still good. V'otanya, furthermore, we learned, v'shenita rov haloshon. Furthermore, we'll say we learned in a brisa that for mumei bechor, that one of the blemishes that disqualifies a firstborn animal, a bechor animal, is if the majority of the tongue has been removed. So we see from here that the loss of the tongue is considered to be a mum. Rebbe Omer, Rov Hamadaber Shebelashono. Rebbe says it has to be the majority of the speaking part of the tongue. Rebbe says the majority of the speaking part of the tongue refers to the following. There are two parts of the tongue. There's the part of the tongue that's attached to the mouth, and there's the part of the tongue that's detached to the mouth. The medaber is considered to be the part of the tongue that's detached from the mouth. So Rebbe says, if the majority of the speaking part of the tongue is removed, that's considered to be a mum. El Rebbe Omer, sirus v'lomi bai lashon. Rather, both say, the way the Gemara understands it is the following. Rebbe holds the following. Sirus, castration, certainly is a mum that allows the eved to go free. Below me by lush, and it goes without saying that loss of the tongue also will allow the eved to go free. Ben Azai says lashon aval sirus lo. Ben Azai, however, says that what? It's only the loss of a tongue that will allow the eved to go free. But he disagrees with Rebbe and holds that castration, that sirus, will not allow the eved to go free. If that's the case, says the Gemara, umay af, right? If the Gemara says so, therefore, what does af mean? Meaning when you read the way the Brisa read before, so the Brisa read after the Brisa quotes the 24 different things, it then says, Rebbe Omer af hasirus, Ben Azai Omer af haloshon. So we'll say that loshon of Ben Azai says af haloshon sounds like what? He's adding on to Rebbe. Rebbe added on castration. Ben Azai is adding on the tongue. And so it sounds like Ben Azai also agrees that castration is one of the things that allows the eved to go free. To which the Gemara answers, Akamaisa, no. Ben Azai's af, even or including, is not going on Rebbe's statement. Rather, what is it going on? It's going on the Brisa. That after the Brisa lifts the 24, Ben Azai says, oh, by the way, there's another one, which is the loss of the tongue. If that's the case, then Ben Azai should be quoted before Rebbe. Then the order should be Brisa, Ben Azai, who adds in the tongue, and Rebbe, because Rebbe agrees with Ben Azai about the tongue, and he also adds in Seirus. So why the order? To which the Gemara gives a very simple answer. Tana, Shama the Rebbe, Udekava, B'shalom Ben Azai, V'tani. Because the Vasai says the Gemara, it's very simple. You know, sometimes not everything has a deeper reason. The Tana, the author of this particular Braisa, heard first the statement of Rebbe, and he appended it to the Braisa. Then afterwards he heard the opinion of Ben Azai, and he appended that to the Braisa. U'mishnah lo zazam imkoma. But he chose not to go ahead and edit the text of the Mishnah when after he heard the statement of Ben Azai. So in other words, the Tana recorded it as he heard it. Amar Ula, Ula says, Hakol modim b'lashon le'inyan tuma digalo ihu etzal sheretz. My time. So also listen to this. Everyone agrees when it comes to the tongue, the inyan tuma. We'll say, now look at Rashi for just a moment. The inyan tuma. So this is now in the wide lines of Rashi, about 2, 4, 6, 7 lines in the inyan tuma. The kaimalon maga beis hastarim eino metame. The nafkalom sechas nida mi v'kol asher yigabo azov. Ha shataf tar. So we'll say the halacha is that in order to go ahead and become tameh, the item of tumah has to touch a visible part of the body. If the object of tumah goes ahead and touches only what we call beis hastarim, a covered part or a private part of the body or an unseen part of the body, that does not convey tumah. So says the Gemara the following. So therefore, let's read that again. Amar Ula, hakol modim b'lashon le'inyan tumah, digaloihu eitzal sheretz. So we'll say everyone agrees that the tongue is considered to be a visible exposed part of the body when it comes to tumah sheretz. So for example, if you were to touch a dead sheretz with your tongue, leave aside the imagery of it, just, right? So the idea over here is you would become tummy. You'd become tummy. Why? Because again, the tongue is considered to be a visible part of the body. My taima, because the pasuk says, Asher yigabo amarachmana, v'hai nami bar negiyohu. Because the pasuk, when it talks about tumah, talks about any part of the body that could come in contact with the sheretz, and the tongue could come in contact with the sheretz. Therefore, again, a person could become tameh with the contact through the sheretz and the tongue. However, hal inyan tvila kitamundami. Also, this is actually very interesting, but yet, when it comes to immersion in a mikvah, the tongue is considered to be like a hidden part of the body. Now, what does that mean for tefillah purposes? What that means is that when a person goes to the mikvah, the main mikvah, the water of the mikvah, need not touch the tongue. In other words, which on many levels is a relief, right? So what that means is the following. Tevilah, as we're going to see, all the waters of the mikvah only have to touch the exposed part of the body. So what the Gemara is pointing out over here is that the tongue has two identities. When it comes to tumah, the tongue is considered to be a revealed part of the body, or visible part of the body. Therefore, again, if the source of tumah touches the tongue, the person becomes tummy. But yet for tevilah, for immersion purposes, the tongue is considered to be what we call beis hastarim. It's considered to be a hidden part of the body. And therefore, again, the waters of the mikvah need not come in contact with the tongue. So my time, what's the reason for this? Berachatz bisaro b'mayim. Because the pasuk says, when it comes to tefillah, you will wash your flesh in the water. Am rachmana, ma bisaro me'avroi, avko me'avroi, just like flesh is on the outside, so too only parts of the body that are on the outside, that are visible, have to come back into the water. So have to come in contact with the water. So we'll say, you see something very interesting. Essentially, what the Gemara is dashing is, it's two separate psukim. When it comes to tumah, the qualifying factor is asher yigabo. If the part of the body could come in contact normally with the sheretz, then lemais, again, it's susceptible to tumah. So the tongue could come in contact with the sheretz, therefore susceptible to tumah. When it comes to immersion in the mikvah, it's rachatz bisaro. Bisaro is the qualifying factor. If it's like flesh, i.e. on the outside invisible, then ultimately it has to come in contact with the water of the mikvah. Tongue, which is not outside invisible, need not come in contact with the main mikvah. Lo nechloku el yinazo. So we'll say, so up until now there's no machlokis. Where does the machlokis come up? When it comes to the sprinkling of the waters of the para aduma. Rebbe medame leilatuma. Rebbe compares the sprinkling of the waters of the para aduma to tumah. And we'll say, remember, what do we say by tumah? Just like by tumah, the tongue is susceptible to tumah. So it's according to Rebbe, what could happen? If the waters of the para aduma land on the tongue, then what? then what? Then lemaisa again, they could become, a person could become tar like that. For Rabbanon medame l'tefila, and the Rabbanon say, the Rabbanon compare this ultimately again to immersion in the mikvah. And they say again, therefore, just like the tongue need not come in contact with the waters of the mikvah, so too if the waters of the paraduma come in contact with the tongue, the waters of Paraduma come in contact with the tongue, then halacha lemaisa, again, the person does not become tahar through that. Vitar vayhu b'hai kroka mifligi. And they are both arguing with the follow, about the following psukim. They're both arguing in the following pasuk. V'hiza hatar ala tome. So the pasuk says that the pure one will sprinkle on the impure one. Rebbe sabar v'hiza hatar ala tome b'yomashlishi u'bayom hashvi'i v'chit'o. So we'll say the way Rebbe understands this is the following. Rebbe understands that the pasuk is v'hiza hatar ala tamei. Torah is teaching us that what? That the essence of the para aduma process is tuma. That the para aduma process in its essence is one of tuma tatara. Therefore, because of its tuma tatara, therefore, when defining the various body parts, we're going to look to the framework of tuma. And therefore, just like when it comes to tumah, again, the tongue is considered to be a part of the body that's susceptible to tumah. Therefore, again, for the ashes, for the waters of the paraduma, the tongue is considered to be a revealed part of the body. And therefore, what? If the waters of the paraduma land on the tongue, the person becomes tahar. But Rabbanan Savri, v'chit'o b'yom ha'shvi'i, v'chibes b'gadav v'rachatz b'mayi. And the Rabbanan, on the other hand, they focus on v'chit'o b'yom ha'shvi'i. He will become pure on the seventh day. Therefore, again, in its essence, the ashes of the paraduma is a process of purification. Because it's a process of purification, therefore what? The definition or the classification of the tongue should be gleaned from the halachos of tara, of mikvah. Therefore, just like by mikvah, the tongue is not considered to be a revealed part of the body, so to by ashes of paraduma is not considered to be a revealed part of the body as well. Therefore, if the water of the paraduma lands on the tongue, the person is not tar. So why don't the rabbis compare para aduma to tuma? Tara mitara havalelamelef. Because Rabbanan feel that the essence of the para aduma process is to purify. Therefore, we should learn one case of tara from another case of tara. Verebi nedami letvila. Why doesn't Rebbe compare it to a case of tvila? V'chibes begadav hifsika inyan. Because according to Rebbe, the pasuk purposely inserts this phrase of v'chibes begadav, literally purifying his clothing, to teach you that the essence of paraduma is purification. So therefore, v'sava Rebbe le'inyan tefila kintamun dami. So what's that? Are you telling me now that Rebbe holds that when it comes to matters of tefila, immersion in a mikvah, that the tongue is considered to be like a hidden part of the body? Therefore, again, the waters of the mikvah need not come in contact with it. V'ha'amar ravin, amar of adar yitzchak. There was an episode with a maidservant of the house of Rebbe. Also remember again, a maidservant, this is a Shifcha Kinanis, is subject to the same laws of Tumantara as a regular Jew. Therefore again, let's say the Shifcha was Tamea, so she has to go to the mikvah to make herself tar. So what happens? One time, she went to the mikvah, and we'll say what happens? She came up from the mikvah, and what happens? She found that she had a bone in between her teeth. Rebbe required her to go back to the mikvah. Now that's very intriguing. Why? Because if Rebbe holds that lamaisa, the tongue is considered to be a hidden part of the body, it's not just the tongue, it means the mouth. What it means therefore is what? What it means therefore is that any time, and remember, what's the issue at play over? The issue at play over is a chatzitza. The halacha is that whenever a woman goes to the mikvah, the truth is it's not just a woman. You know, today, the only type of real immersions that we think about are for a woman, but the truth is, remember, bizmana mikdash, tumantara, there are many obligatory tvilos on a man as well. So man, woman, doesn't make a difference. The halacha is when it's an obligatory immersion, you can't have a chatzitza. You can't have anything interposing between your body and the water. So Rebbe's maidservant went to the mikvah. She comes after the mikvah. There's a bone in her mouth. There's a bone in her teeth. We'll say bone is a chatzitza, technically. So therefore, so Rebbe made her go back to the mikvah. One second. Rebbe, you just said before that what? You just said before that the tongue is not considered to be a visible part of the body. Therefore, the water of the mikvah need not come back to the tongue. We would assume that applies to the mouth as well. If that's the case, Rebbe, why are you requiring her to go back to the mikvah? Because of a bone in her teeth. To which the Gemara says, oh, I'll tell you why. Nihid de bias maim lo ba'inon Makom haroi lavo bo mayim abayin. Abba says a very important yisod, that even though we don't require the water to come into her mouth, but technically speaking, the mouth has to be ready for water to come into it. Well, so in other words, what that means is that in halacha you have this concept that although certain things do not require bias mayim, but the makom, the place, the space, has to be fit for bias mayim, for the water to come. So for example, the water does not need to fill her mouth, but her mouth cannot contain any chatzitas. Which I will say, that actually is halacha lemaisa. That's the way we paskin. Many we pass in general that may make when a woman goes to whoever's going to the mikvah, the water doesn't have to come into certain parts of her body, but those parts of the body have to be ra'ui, have to be fit for water to be able to enter in there. So the mouth is one of those examples. So therefore, again, the Gemara gives another example of this. The Gemara says, "Makom haroi lavo b'mayim ba'ino kid Rabbi Zera." And this is like the first Rabbi Zera. What is Rabbi Zera? Says Rabbi Zera, "Kala roi lebila im bila ma'akeves bo v'shein roi lebila bila ma'akeves bo." And Abba said, "This is by karba mincha. The halacha by karba mincha is that ideally, what is supposed to be able to mix the flour and the oil and the lavona." So that the Gemara talks about a case where there's too much flour. There's too much flour in the mixing bowl to be in the karnik mixing bowl to be able to mix the mincha. So the Gemara says that such a mincha is invalid. But asks the Gemara, I don't understand. The halacha is well, say if you offered up a karnik mincha without mixing it at all, the mincha is still a valid offering. So how could it be if there's too much flour in there to mix it? It's possible. To which the Gemara answers, you're right. Mixing the mincha is not ma'akev, but what? The mincha has to be mixable. As long as the mincha is mixable, then the mixing is not ma'akev. But if the mincha is not mixable, then the mixing is ma'akev. So we have this principle in halacha that sometimes we just need to know that a certain process is possible. So do we require the water to come into the woman's mouth when she goes to the mikvah? No. But what do we require? We require it, the mouth to be a space where if the water were to come in there, there would be no chatzitza. That's only the mouth. Yeah, other internal parts of the body, meaning we don't require this of anything more internal. It's only the mouth. So kitanoi, the Gemara says, in reality, this whole thing is a machlokes. And I must remember, again, all of this, all roads lead back to the Beitza, right? So remember again that ultimately, all, I know that's I know it sounds like a strange expression, but it actually fits us, because remember again that's our question, that's our fundamental question over here, which is that remember if the Adon goes ahead and castrates the Eved, so does that mum send the Eved free or not? So says the Gemara Kitanoi. In reality, again, it's a machlokes tanoim. So the Gemara over here also quotes the pasuk. Now this is actually talking about over here umauch v'kasus v'nasuk v'karus. So we'll say this is talking about ultimately again the type of animals that you cannot offer up as a karbon. So this is all different kinds of injuries by the beitzim. So the Gemara says mauch literally means squashed, kasus is crushed, nasuk is detached, karus is cut. All of these kulam beitzim, these are all different injuries that the animal could experience in the beitz. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. These are the words of Rabbi Yehuda. The beitzim lo begid. Now you're telling me that these are only injuries by the beitzim and not by the gid, not by the makumila. Ela kulan af beitzim. Rather, again, all of these injuries are even by the beitzim. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Those are both sides. The fact that these injuries apply by the gid, that's much more obvious. Why? Because that everyone agrees is visible. The Rabbi Yehuda is saying not only are these injuries a disqualifying factor by the gid, but they're also a disqualifying factor by the beitzim. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, kulam begid. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says, no, all of them only apply by the gid. Rabbi Yossi Omer, ma'och v'kasus af bebeitzim. Rabbi Yossi holds that ma'och and kasus, which literally means squashed or crushed, applies even to the beitzim. Nosuk v'karus begid in bebeitzim. Rabbi Yossi is actually an interesting distinction. Rabbi Yossi wants to suggest that if the beitzim are squashed or crushed, then that indeed would be a disqualifying factor. If they're only cut or detached, that would not be why I will say. Because interestingly enough, if it's cut, so that means, remember, I don't know the technical terms, but the cords that hold the beitzim, if those cords are cut, so the beitzim remain in the kiss, and from the outside, the Gemara is suggesting it wouldn't look any different. If they're crushed, it will look different from the outside. So that's actually making an interesting distinction. If they're squashed or if they're crushed, if it's Machor Kasus, then ultimately, again, that will be a Mumsha Begodli. That will be a visible injury. If, however, it's just the cords that are cut, therefore, from the outside, the Beitzim still remain there in the kiss, it would not be a visible injury, and therefore, Evan would not go out for you. So we'll say, Halacha L'maisa. Halacha L'maisa, how do we pass it over here? I'm sorry.
Was that a common practice?
For animals?
For the slaves to be...
Oh yeah, but not by Jews. Meaning we're not allowed to do this. But in the Welt, as they say, it absolutely was to emasculate your avodim. Absolutely. So I will say, listen to this. So now look, this is in the Rambam. This is in the Rambam. Perek hei, halocha hei. So listen to what the Rambam says. He says, I'm sorry, where was it? Okay, so this, I'm sorry, Halacha Dalet. So the Rambam goes through the Rosh Eibar, the 24 different parts of the limbs that ultimately cause a person to go free. We'll just focus just specifically on the Gemara's Kasha over here. So the Gemara says, again, the Rambam says that the general criteria for a mum is that it's galoy, is that it's visible, and einon chozrin, and ultimately it does not regenerate. Aval mesaris avdo bebeitzim. If an adon goes ahead and castrates the Eved in the Beitzim, o achotech l'shono, or for that matter, again, he cuts off the Eved's tongue, eino yotze l'cherus. Ultimately, again, the Eved does not go free. Why? She'inon mumin shebegavoy. So both say, Saloch l'maisa, the Rambam paskins, is that both by the Beitzim, as well as by the Lashon, it's not considered to be a visible injury, and therefore, Saloch l'maisa, again, the Eved does not go free. That she does at Rambam. Says the Mishnah. But say, now we're back to much tamer subjects. So, Behema Gasa. So both say, now we're going to talk about animals a little bit. So remember, we're getting now into the topics of Kinyonim, because l'maisa, again, we spoke about Kinyonim by Avadim. Now that we're talking about Avadim, Kinyonim by Avadim, we're talking about Kinyonim and other Inyonim. So Behema Gasa, a large animal, Nipnis b'Mesira, can be acquired through Mesira. I will say, we'll discuss what Mesira is, but very simply, Rashi points out, Mesira means you hand over the reins, let's say, to the purchaser. So by the Mesira, the Hadaka, a smaller animal, Bahagba, is acquired how? By lifting it up. To Rabbi Meir, these words Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Eliezer v'chamom, Rabbi Eliezer v'chamom say, behemadaka niknis b'mashicha. They say that no, a small animal is acquired with mashicha. So darash rav bekim chunya. So rav darsh din kim chunya. We'll say kim chunya is a place. So rav darsh din kim chunya. Behema gasa niknis b'mashicha. A large animal is acquired with Mashiach. So we'll say, so remember again, so Rav is now saying a little bit differently. The Mishnah said that a large animal is acquired with Mesira, is Mesira. Rav comes along and says that a large animal is acquired with Mashiach. So the Gemara says, Ashkechinu Shmuel l'talmidei de Rav. So Shmuel found the Talmidim of Rav, Amar Luhu, and he said to them, Mi Amar Rav behema gasa niknis be Mashiach. Did Rav say that a large animal is acquired with Mashiach? V'ha'anar b'mesira tenan. But we learned in our Mishnah that a large animal is acquired with Mesira. V'rav nami b'mesira amar. Hadra b'me'ahi. And Rav, who says that a large animal is acquired with Mesira, did he retract, meaning does he disagree with the Mishnah? Hu da amar ki aitana. The Rav holds like the following time. The Sanya, the Chacham say, Zu v'zu niknis b'mesicha. The Chacham say that what Rav say. Both this, a large animal and a small animal, could both be acquired with Mashiach. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Zu Vizu Bahagba. And Rabbi Shimon says that both a large animal and a small animal could be acquired with Hagba. So we'll say, so what does that mean? Maske for Rabbi Yosef, Elame Ata, Peel the Rabbi Shimon B'mayik. So we'll say, so this is actually very interesting. So what comes out, by the way, is we'll see that Lemaisa, again, the way one acquires, we pass like the Chacham Rabosai, that both a large animal and a small animal could be acquired with Mashiach. Mashiach Rabosai is the process, we actually learned about Mashiach 2 days ago. Mashiach is the process of either you pull the animal, or you cause the animal to move. For example, let's say you hit the animal a little bit, and the animal moves as a result of that force, or korava v'hiba, or you call out to him, and the animal comes to you. L'maisi, again, those are all called mashicha. We pass that to Hacham. That's how you acquire large animals or small animals. Rabbi Shimon advances a very novel idea. The fact that I could acquire a small animal b'hagba, I totally hear that. I lift it up. Rabbi Shimon says you even acquire a large animal b'hagba. So asks the Gemara, well, if that's the case, Rabbi Yosef says, so how do you acquire an elephant according to Rabbi Shimon? Right? In other words, again, so Rabbi Shimon says you have to acquire by hakba, with picking it up. So what do you do for an elephant? So Rabbi Shimon doesn't mean that hakba is the only mechanism for acquiring large animals. He says it is a mechanism. But let's say for an exceptionally large animal, you could use chalipin. Rabbi Yosef, right? We spoke about chalipin yesterday, the day before. The flip act of acquisition. Namely, again, the owner has the animal, the kona, the purchaser gives the owner an object, the owner acquires the object, and the purchaser, bless you, acquires the PO, acquires the elephant. Inami, the other possibility is besoches mekomo. We'll say the other possibility is if you want to acquire an animal, what do? You purchase the space or you rent the space upon which the animal is sitting. Therefore, essentially, what do? A kinyan chatzar. If you own the chatzar, you could own whatever is within the chatzar as well. So rent, ultimately, again, rent the space and acquire the pill, acquire the elephant that's on the space as well. Mm-hmm. Rabbi Zera Omer, maybe arba kelim, umanichan tachas raglav. This is actually very interesting. Rabbi Zera says, here's what you do. You the purchaser brings four of his own utensils. And what? He has the elephant step up onto the utensils. So essentially, again, the utensils acquire the elephant. Remember, a person's kalim, a person's utensils, have the ability to acquire in his bath. So allow the utensils to go and acquire the elephant. Shamus Mino, what do we learn from here? Kalev Shalokech, Bishus Mocher Korn. Remember, we spoke about this a long time ago. So what do you see from here? That the utensils of a purchaser have the ability to acquire even in the domain of the seller. So Hacham asking, and what's the case? So Vier Besimta. So first of all, no, we might not be talking about the Rishus of the Mocher, the Rishus of the seller, rather a Simta. What's a Simta? Is an alleyway. A rash is a zavis, a corner. That's an area that's almost like Rosh Sarabim, and therefore everyone is able to use it. So it's like kind of like a little bit of a halachic no man's land. It's not Rosh Sarabim, it's not Rosh Sayochid, but it's an area that people used to acquire stuff all the time. Inami, top of Chavavu, this will stop. Bechavile Zimura. So we'll say it's actually very interesting. The other way in which you could acquire an elephant is with bundles of vines. What does that mean? Look at Rashi. Rashi says, now, what we're trying, remember, what are we trying to figure out? Rabbi Shimon said you could do hagbah with large animals. So the Gemara says, that's fine, except what do you do about an elephant? So you've given a number of answers. Either A, chalipin, B, kinyan chatzar, C, kalev shel kona, right? Use the utensils of the purchaser. And now D, chavilei zmuros. We'll say, what does it mean? Look at Rashi. Chavilei zmuros, hagibah mina ar shel shetfakim. What you do is you pile up vines that are more than 3 tfachim high. Umolichin aleihem. You bring the animal on top of the vines, and what do you accomplish? Dagbas shlosha tfachim hagbahi. By doing this, what do? You go ahead, and essentially, you build up a mound of vines more than 3 tfachim high, and therefore bring the animal more than 3 tfachim off the ground. Umolichin aleihem dagbas shlosha tfachim hagbahi. In other words, if you lead the animal more than 3 tefachim off the ground, then essentially that's what? That's hagbah as well. Therefore, that's how you could, so if anyone ever asks you, how could you acquire a peel? How could one acquire an elephant through hagbah? The answer is not by lifting it up yourself, but by causing the animal to be lifted. By causing the animal to climb on top of vines that are more than 3 tefachim off the ground, in other words, they're not lavud, halacha lemaisa, again, that accomplishes hagbah. All right, so we'll say stop over here. I'm sorry? Hydraulic lift. Bepashtos, yeah. Bepashtos, yeah.